And it is hard for a child to go through that. I mean, we do have to give them some choices and some liberties to make their own decisions. And if they mess up along the way, then that's okay, because that's part of growing up. Yeah, I mean, that is normal. And we have to teach them right from wrong. So let them make those mistakes. And then let's teach them so they do better the next time. That's what's going to cause your children to grow up to be successful and responsible adults.
So mistakes are actually stepping stones to being successful or to growing independence and responsibilities, right?
Life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. But the Dr. Stem Show will give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Have you ever wished that you had known what to do with your child when they were as young as 6, 7 years old, or maybe a pre-teenager from 9 to about 12 years old, and you knew how to cap their behavior, the way they talk back to you, and you could have done or said something different to them? I know a lot of times we talk about teenagers, and at that time, if you ask me, I think it's a little late to start to teach them how to be, or the things that you want to mold them into, the best well-behaved, you know, children that you want. Well, at that time, it'll be pre-adults that they want, that you want them to be. I'm very excited because one of the things that I have done for the last 20 years is I work with teenagers, and I can't tell you how many times I have said to myself, if only we had started talking to these kids at 6 years old, some of the stuff, expectations that we have, we probably wouldn't have that much, problems to work with when they are teenagers. So I'm excited to have a guest with me who to me is an expert, because she's been doing what she does as a mental health counselor, school counselor, and she's also a certified coach for many years in the school. And I want to welcome Bob Roba.
Hello, Dr. Stem.
Hello there. So you heard me saying she's been doing it for many years. How many years have you been a school counselor, by the way?
I have been a school counselor, certified school counselor, for 15 years. I've worked with that younger population that you just mentioned for about 18 to 20 years.
Look at that. And I think, you know what, that's why at this point you are an expert. I hope you know that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that acknowledgement.
Yes, because after, you know, after so many years, probably, you know, 10 years, I would safely say that, and you've been working with different behaviors, different parents, and, you know, consultations, you tend to see it coming. I know for me, after the 20 years now, I know I could finish a sentence for a parent that's coming to seek, you know, counseling for their teenager.
Yes, I understand.
Right? I can finish it. They start telling me and I go, okay, I know where this is going.
Yes. And then you also know what to recommend from that point, because you've been down that road before, which makes it so much better for the family.
Yes. Do you find yourself, because for me, sometimes I find myself just smiling and then they go, why are you smiling? And I forget that they're so mad at that time. They're like, why are you smiling? I said, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, it's almost like I can see a record playing and then playing again, you know, back in the days when we had the records, you know, and then it skips because it's kind of scratch.
Correct. That is funny.
Yeah, so I say, well, you know, I'm sorry because I've heard this before, and I know you probably think this is the end of the world, but we're going to get to some place where you'll be able to understand and be understood by your child.
Correct. There is always a light at the end of the tunnel, and although we're, you know, we may have that smirk on our face, we're not laughing at that situation, but we've definitely been down this road before, and we know that there will be that light and that time that they're able to resolve what is going on.
Exactly. So I know you're also a mom.
I am, yes.
How old are your children and how many do you have?
I have two boys. I have two very active boys. They are ages 9 and 6.
Oh, just the very same age that you're working with.
You got it. And I have to sometimes take my own advice when I'm at home with them now that they have arrived at this age.
You're right. Well, the topic today that we are talking about is emotional regulation, which is one of your special areas that you have been working with kids. What does that term mean?
That's a great question because I've had people ask me that very question, you know, when they see it posted somewhere or if I'm talking. And really to take it down to basics, when I'm saying emotional regulation, I'm talking about a child's emotions along with their parents' emotions because we're always interacting with one another. So if we're talking about our emotions and we add that word regulation on, it means we want to have some state of feeling calm because we're regulated, if that makes sense. So being able to handle the stressors of life that's coming. Now, for a 6-year-old, it could be they're told no, they can't do something. So that's a stressor for them. Yeah. For us parents, maybe that kid that's not listening to us is a stressor. In either situation, we need to be able to regulate how we're feeling so that we're not yelling at them. Unfortunately, you know, some parents swear at their kids and, you know, we try to keep those emotions regulated so we don't get to that point. Now, on the flip side, with that 6-year-old, we're going to try to avoid that tantrum behavior or that nagging behavior. Let's regulate this. You were just told no. What are your options for being calm or getting back to that state of feeling calm?
Did you just say that the parents also need to regulate their emotions and stay calm?
Oh, I sure did, because guess who is always looking toward their parents to see who or how to live their life? If we're always flying off the handle, our kids are going to learn very quickly that this is the way to deal with a stressful situation in life, which isn't going to get them very far, Dr. Stem.
You're right. I just posted yesterday, actually, I just posted on my Facebook page that mm-hmm. children really live what they learn. So watch what you say, watch what you do, because that's what they will emulate.
Yes, you are correct. And I see that in the school setting. You know, yes. If we have a child that is treating another child poorly, more times than not, when we get down to the bottom of it, that is unfortunately how they're being treated at home. So that is what they know as far as how to act in a stressful or even a normal social situation is to treat others unkind, which, you know, we try to teach the alternate way and work with the parents as well.
So then do you all have in your school training a group for parents to come and learn on emotional regulation, mm-hmm. or it only happens when something happens, then you call them in, then you talk to them about it?
Yes, it is more on an individual basis, although I love your idea of having a parent group, you know, and having a night for that. But yes, it is. It's on a case-by-case basis. And when I do groups with students trying to help foster that emotional regulation piece, the parents are also involved as far as what steps we're taking. And then I can also make some recommendations for home.
I see the topic is, you know, keeping calm.
Yes.
When all your buttons have been pushed.
Mm-hmm. And if we're honest, that is a very difficult task.
It sure you know, is.
For adults too. And I get that. You know, I've been yeah. to that place that I feel I'm going to lose it, you know, yes. And that's when you have to say to yourself, okay, this is when I have to take that break. I need to walk away. I need to use some of my mindfulness strategies and start taking some deep breaths. And, you know, whatever's going on can wait 5 minutes until I can regroup. You know, that's a great lesson for parents and kids alike.
I like that. So those were the coping skills that you just mentioned.
Yes, those are a few of them.
let's review those again, because you said it so fast and I thought, oh, those are good. How could they, you know, regulate their emotions if something is happening?
So if we're talking about the parents, I would recommend highly just take a break. I know for my, I'll just say my youngest kiddo, 6 years old, you know, we have the spot on the stairs where it's timeout. And if he's really testing my limits and I'm feeling frustrated, like you said, all my buttons have been pushed, he's sitting in timeout and I'm going to take those 6 minutes, because it's always in timeout, 1 minute per age of the child. So I'm going to take those 6 minutes and I'm going to walk away from the situation and I'm going to take some deep breaths. I do a lot of mindfulness. I'm starting to get more and more the word out about mindfulness and be mindful of your present state on how you can regulate how you're feeling by doing some counting, by doing some breathing. And after that 5-6 minutes are up, then I'm in a much better state. Now, if I'm talking about the kids, I'm going to ask them, yes, to go to that timeout spot. But I've also done what's called, or I call, a coping toolbox. And I may have my son or the student I'm working with at school go and get their coping toolbox. And inside will be things that are comforting to them. So since we're talking about techniques here, you may find that an individual technique for a specific child will be clay, because they can work that clay and they can form it into something. They can get that energy out when they're working that clay. It could be a pinwheel for deep breathing. It could be a picture of something that makes them happy. So each child has things that can help regulate their emotions, and we just need to be able to tap into those things to see what works for our kids.
That is an awesome idea. And I suggest for those parents that are listening, you know, or teachers that are listening, one of the things that I have done, you know, I didn't call it a coping toolbox, which is awesome. But yeah. I always ask the parents to, when they're initiating, you know, a system like this one, to probably sit down with their child and create that box together. And mom shares what her coping skills are, or dad shares what his coping skills are. And then, you know, the child also puts what, you know, their coping skills are in their box, so that they know that, you know, remember how we talked about they emulate how we control our emotions?
Correct.
Yes. So I think it's a great idea for them to even create it together when they're creating their separate boxes.
Yes, and you are so right, because in addition to what you said, when I have kids participating in their own coping toolbox, they have more of a desire to use it, because yes, they've had a say in what goes in that box, and that creates excitement even for them to find success with it, which is just perfect.
You're right. You're right. I like that coping toolbox. I probably will make some with my teenagers, because I, you know, as I was mentioning earlier on, I work with teenagers. So at that point, I, you know, I probably will need to do that as well, to just create some, you know, creative boxes, because now we're doing vision boards. That's what we're doing, you know, this next workshop that I'll be doing. But it'll be, I think it'll be cool to
That's
do
great.
One for, yeah, for a coping toolbox. Now, parents frequently ask, you know, for help with getting their kids to be better listeners.
Yes, they do.
What do you recommend?
Oh, boy, this is where I mentioned earlier, sometimes I have to take my own advice.
Yes.
But, you know, when I take, you know, this list that I have in my head right now that I'm going to share with you as far as getting kids to listen, when I follow that list, and when I hear that parents who have asked for this advice follow this list, things just get so much better for them. So I'm going to start with eye contact. When you're having a conversation with anyone, or you're asking your kids to listen, look at them. I mean, there's so many times that, you know, we're busy, and maybe your kids are in a different room, and you're in the kitchen cooking dinner, and you need them to do something. So what do you think happens? You know, we're shouting through the house, you know, hey, I need you to come in here. I need your help with something. So either they're not hearing you, or they're going to choose, you know, to selectively ignore you at that time. But if you have that eye contact with them, you know, they heard you, and you know that they're not distracted by other things going on around them, excuse me, which actually brings me to my next one. Remove the distractions. Put the phone away. Like, that's the biggest distraction that I see, even in public, when parents are trying to talk to their children, they're looking at their phone while they're talking. Like, it just doesn't make sense. You know, you have to have that eye contact piece. So put the phone away, put dinner on hold for a minute, walk up to your child and get on their level and specifically ask them to do what you need them to do. For the younger kids especially, or if you have a child that has difficulty with remembering, whether it's lack of attention or focus at that time, I also find it very helpful to give only a one-step direction. So, for example, if you needed your child to finish their homework and also feed the dog, maybe you would choose to first say, "Can you please go feed the dog?" When they're done with that one direction, it was only one step to feed that dog, then you go on to say, "Okay, now go sit in the dining room and I need you to finish your homework." So it's one step at a time instead of saying, "Go feed the dog and then your homework." Because for a lot of kids, they're not going to remember that last step. "Okay, wait, I fed the dog. Now what was I supposed to do? Oh, maybe I'll just go back to what I was doing before." You know, they're not going to ask you for something else to do.
That's really good. I think even for the older kids, it's, you know, I mean, if they try to give them one step direction as well, it's most likely going to be done. But I really like what you just mentioned about having to put whatever the parent is doing to see if they can go to the room or to where their, you know, child is and ask them, looking at them so that they see you and they know, "Oh, I didn't hear you. I didn't see you." Because now even for them, they will have gone there and look in the eye and say, "Listen, I need you to do such and such."
You are correct. Yeah. Yes. And that makes such a difference.
But then, you know, the parents are going to say, "You want me to leave what I'm doing? He's supposed to be listening all the time." Because by the time they go to the child, this is now the third or fourth time they've been yelling, "Michael, Michael." And then by the time it's the third time and they walk up to Michael, they're screaming. And at that moment, this child is either drawing, painting, or has headphones, which you bought, in their ear. And they didn't hear the first Michael and the second one.
That's right. Yeah. You are correct. So then now we're back to that emotional regulation piece. How are you going to keep yourself calm? But also, once you are in a habit of using these listening techniques, these strategies of the proximity and the one-step direction, it's not going to take that much time. Like, you can peek in a room and call your child's name and they're going to know you need something. And you can say, "Come here, please." And then go back to, you know, cooking that dinner, but still use that eye contact. I mean, there's not going to be very many times that you can't walk away from something unless you have a pot boiling over in the kitchen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. You can turn the stove off too, even if it's boiling.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a really good point. But this is teaching them how to show respect to others too.
Yes.
You know, when you have a conversation with someone or you're asking something of someone, you're to use eye contact. You're not to yell down the hallway to them or to another room. You know, this is teaching your kids how to interact respectfully with one another.
You're right. And one of the things that I know I always emphasize to parents and, you know, to the children as well is one word: breathe. Mm-hmm.
Breathe. Oh, yes. Just breathe.
Just breathe. So I say to parents, with this advice that you've just given us today, how that will help you to train yourself to let, you know, go and look at your child and talk to them, it will help you to breathe. But then guess what? You will not be stressed out by having to argue about, "I called you three times and you should have heard me." And they say, "Well, I didn't hear you and I don't know why you're yelling."
Yes. Imagine the time and the frustration it will save for both of you just by walking away from what you're currently doing to get that eye contact. That's huge.
That's really big. You know what? I'm enjoying this. Let me take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
There's a term in my country, I speak Shona, is my language. I'm from Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. And that term says, if I have to translate it, it says, those that have ears, let them hear.
Ah.
To say, you know what, we're having a great discussion that will help even couples. Let's say you're listening to this show today and you say, well, you know what, I don't have children, so I don't have to listen to this. I think this information that, you know, Bob is sharing with us today is also helpful for adults, whether it's communication in your job, with your family, with your spouse, with your significant other. I think this is pertinent information that can be taken by adults as well. That's why sometimes I say, you know what, if we can have the adults control their emotions, control their behaviors and the way that they approach, you know, other individuals who, you know, especially in communication, it's much better for everybody. So I like this way, even if you're an adult and you are calling on your spouse or you're calling on a colleague and you ask them to do something or you expect them to say something and you haven't looked in their eyes so that they hear you and they understand what it is that you're asking them to do, then of course there's going to be conflict.
Yes, I agree with you. And then that's when you have those frustrations that arise and, you know, that conflict that you just mentioned. So it is very important.
Very, very important. So the other thing that I wanted to, you know, to ask you as well, what's the most thing that parents should know when they're trying to improve their children's behavior?
This might sound a little funny, but I want them to take a minute and just look in the mirror. I want them to reflect on their own behaviors, because so many times when I'm working with families, they're trying to fix the kid, so to say. And that's not to say that the child doesn't need support through, the emotional regulation groups or support with how to listen. I mean, we all can improve things in our life. I mean, that's definitely something that even adults need. But our children are going to react to us the way we react to them. And just like you said not too long ago, Dr. Stem, if a child has those earphones in and they didn't hear us calling their name and all of a sudden we're yelling and they're looking at us like, why are you yelling at me? And all of a sudden their anxiety is up and their frustrations are up. You know, we have to, I just want parents to look in the mirror, you know, and ask yourself, are you yelling a lot at your kids? And if you are, how are you going to take steps to fix that? Because if you're always yelling at them, you're teaching them that yelling is how you solve problems, which is obviously not what we want. Because again, they're looking to us to be their role model. And some parents say, well, what's the difference? You know, punishment or discipline. And throughout my years of working with families and my research, I've really come to the realization that what we need to be doing when our child does something wrong is to discipline them, which is a teaching model. So are we teaching them why they're going to sit in timeout, like I mentioned with my six-year-old son? Are we teaching them that you're sitting here because you hit your brother and that's not okay and this is why it's not okay? Go to your room because you're in trouble, and then we don't have a conversation. You know, that would be punishing them. You're punished and we're not going to talk about it. So I also ask parents, you know, to reflect on that too. How are you delivering your consequences in your home? Are you using it as a teaching experience? And then the last thing that I like parents to reflect on, are you dictating your child's actions, or are you able to give choices? Because if we're always saying to our kids, do this, do that, and there's no room for negotiation, we're not teaching our kids to be independent. We're not teaching them responsibility. We're just telling them what to do. And it's kind of like we're this dictator over them, which is not going to improve their behavior because they're not going to be able to figure out for themselves what is appropriate and what's not. It's almost like they're living in this realm of being nervous and scared that they're always going to have that punishment piece and not understand it. And I know that might sound extreme, but I have seen that before with parents. So when we're trying to improve your kids' behavior, I want you just to take a look at yourself and how you're raising your kids in these areas of yelling, punishment, discipline, and then also if you're able to give choices to your kids.
Thank you very much for that. And you know what, just to emphasize on that, it is not the extreme at all. Because the sad thing is, even the adults that I see in counseling, they come in and it's amazing how most of them will reflect to a time back when they were either as young as the 6-7 year old or teenagers, and they had parents that not only were yelling but were disciplinarians.
Mm-hmm.
And they still carry it in their adult years.
Correct. Yes. And it is hard. Yeah. For a child to go through that. I mean, we do have to give them some choices and some liberties to make their own decisions. And if they mess up along the way, then that's okay, because that's part of growing up.
That's,
I mean, that is normal. And we have to teach them right from wrong. So let them make those mistakes. And then let's teach them so they do better the next time. That's what's going to cause your children to grow up to be successful and responsible adults.
So mistakes are actually stepping stones to being successful or to growing independence and responsibilities, right?
Yes, mistakes is how we learn,
yeah.
Kids and adults, you know, that's when the best learning happens.
But for some reason, children are not given another slack. It's like, no, you're not supposed to make mistakes. And when they make the mistakes, everything just breaks loose. Like, what? Mm-hmm. What did you do? And I think what you're saying is, parents, like we said before, take a deep breath, take a look at yourself. Mm-hmm. As you say, look at yourself in the mirror. And
yes.
see the person that's looking back at you sometimes is the same reflection that the kids are reflecting back to you, your behavior.
Yes, and sometimes it is. And all those things I just listed, again, goes back to that emotional regulation.
Yeah.
You know, let's make some wise choices. If we can regulate those emotions, our brain is going to process the information much better for us to make those positive decisions for our kids, and they're going to see that and they're going to model that as well in their own life. Like, that's a win-win for me.
And you know what, there's also, I always tell parents as well that, you know what, you know how that term, they say it, you know, if I was a fly on the wall.
Yes.
In your house, I feel like the kids with the children, when they come into the schools, they actually allow us professionals to be the fly in the wall in their homes because of their behaviors. We tend to see what's going on in the home through the child's behavior.
Yes. Yes. That's a very good way to put it. I've never even thought about that.
Right.
But yes, when I say look in the mirror, really changing or improving a child's behavior starts with the parents. It starts with us as the moms and the dads in the home. It doesn't start with taking your child to go see a counselor. It starts as a family. It starts with you. So take a look in the mirror for sure.
And if when they come in, you know, for counseling, and I get an intake for a teenager or a child, I require that I also meet with the parents or the parent.
Yes.
And I can tell you probably 70-80% of the time, mm-hmm. my client is the adult, the parent.
Mm-hmm. And that's just where it has to start. I mean, we can give strategies to the kids and they go home and they use them and that's great. But what we can't control is how the parents are going to react, or what the parents are going to do. So having them be part of the plan makes the plan more successful because they have to have the knowledge in order to use it.
That's very true. How can people, because your information is much needed, how can people get in touch with you, Bob?
Oh, there's a few different ways. You could definitely visit my website. My website is behaviorcorner.com because we're talking all about children's behavior. The counselor's corner, so I do have counseling available for parents, kids alike. Also, though, what's very exciting is I have a Facebook group. It's called Raising Kids, Behavior Solutions That Work. So I am on there multiple times a week posting things. I'm also doing live videos one time a week. And a lot of those videos are coming right from the requests of my parents and my followers. So we're addressing those real life situations and taking examples from people's homes and solving problems for them, which is so, so beneficial and so rewarding for me to do. So I'm hoping that you guys will join me there.
Awesome. So we are talking today to Bob Roba, who is a mental health counselor, school counselor, and a certified coach who works with behaviors. That's an expertise on any behaviors that you might be seeing in your children. You might want to go to behaviorcorner.com to see more of the blogs. Also, the one thing that I enjoy about Bob is she's very good and very consistent on sending out emails about the new blogs that she has on her website. So I suggest that you also sign up for those emails, because once you sign up, then she'll tell you the new topics and the new blogs that she has on her website. And thank you for those emails, by the way.
You are very welcome. Thank you for enjoying them.
Oh, yeah. They're really, you know, I mean, most of the time I think, oh, wow, I never thought of it this way. So I'm always learning as well, you know, on those blogs that you post out.
Oh, well, thank you. I strive to meet the needs of, you know, the parents that I work with and the real life problems that they're dealing with to try to help make their families more peaceful.
Yeah. So I know you also mentioned that there are fundamental skills to parenting that you speak about on your website. And you also have a book. I didn't even know that you have a book.
I do. I have a book, and it is called The Building Blocks of Positive Parenting, because everything that promoting and everything on my website has a basis in positive parenting, because we're trying to raise individuals who have positive behavior. And I've found throughout the years that there's several key foundations to helping this thing we call parenting go a little bit more smoothly. And I'm hoping you're going to agree with me here, Dr. Stem. Consistency is at the top of my list.
Yes. Yes.
If we can be consistent with our kids, like if we say we're going to do something, we're going to consistently follow through and we're going to do it. Even if it's something as simple as we told our kids we're going to take them to the park later. We need to follow through on that so that they understand that we're not just saying things to say it. When we're consistent, it builds trust and it builds relationships and it builds respect. Go ahead.
No, you're right. I was going to agree with you on that.
Okay, perfect. And I just see it too, again, transferring over into our kids and how they interact with others at school, or daycare providers, whatever it may be. If they say they're going to do something, they're going to do it. You know, it's kind of like a core value as a human. You know, you need to follow through with what you say you're going to do. You need to keep your promises. And on the flip side of that, if we're talking about behavior and improving behavior, if you have a behavior plan in place, or even if you say to your child, if your room is not clean by the time dinner's ready, you're going to have a consequence. You need to be consistent and follow through with that, because if you don't, they're not going to take you seriously. It's kind of like, too, if I say to my son, if you don't listen to me this time, you're going to time out. But then I give him two more warnings. I wasn't consistent in doing what I said I was going to do. I didn't follow through on that. So he's going to think, well, I don't need to listen to what she's saying because she's not going to put me in timeout anyways.
And that's very key, because then, you know what, they're always watching and looking at, okay, is she going to be consistent? Is he going to be consistent, you know, with what they say? That's also with disciplining.
Yes.
There's something that you say, this is not acceptable and this is the consequence for that, let that be consistent what the consequence would be, so that they know that if I steal, I get arrested and I go to jail.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? That's good, because as they're growing into those teenagers that you work with, they need to know that, you know, the rule is the rule. I actually, I learned something at a workshop not too long ago, something called the video game analogy. Like, kids, they love their video games, right? Teenagers and the younger ones. Well, what happens if you're driving a car in your video game and you drive off the road? Well, usually that guy falls off and you die and you have to start over, right? Mm-hmm. That's consistent. Yeah. They know what to expect. So although us as humans, we're not video games, we're not robots, we need to be consistent so our kids know what to expect. It just improves their behavior so greatly when we are consistent with them.
The cell phones you're talking about, you just talked about the cell phones. A lot of parents, you know, have the difficulty, you know, if a child does something, to take away the phone. You know how for most parents now, on their number one list is, I'll take your phone, because even 6 year olds have cell phones and they want to take away the phones. What's your take on that?
I actually take it one level up, and I'll take away screen time. So you take away the screen, that includes the phone, the TV, the laptop, the Chromebook, that, you know, any screen. So if you're looking to take away the cell phone, you may even want to elevate it to the screen time, depending on, you know, what goal you're trying to reach. Now, you know, if you're talking about, say, social media, and you feel that your child shouldn't be using social media, maybe you're just going to take the devices away that have that social media element. I guess it would depend on the situation.
Yeah. And you know what? Here's one thing that I know for most parents, you know, as far as the cell phone, taking away the cell phone. Mm-hmm. A lot of your children, even the children, but mostly I know for the teenagers, they will fight you until you lose your teeth.
Yes.
For trying to grab that phone. So I'm always asking the parents, and I said, you know what? I know with my provider, my cell phone provider and my phone provider, on the computer, there's a place where, because then their lines are additional lines that you have for your children.
Yes.
There's a place on the computer where all you do is turn it off, and that phone is off. And if you can't do it, you make a phone call to your company and you tell them, I need this cell phone off.
Yes.
And you don't have to touch. Let them be on their phone. They can be on their phone, but it doesn't have service anymore.
Yes, you are right. And cell phones and video games and computers, those are all privileges. Those aren't things that parents have to provide, like a basic need such as food, shelter, clothing. Those phones are privileges. So those are things that need to be earned through good behavior. That's how I raise my kids in my home.
But then guess what? Even if you turn it off, they still can receive text messages and their other, you know, website. So in order to avoid all this, I think we get back again to that toolbox. When everything is going well and you can sit down with your child and you say, okay, let's play the scenarios of what could happen and what, you know, the consequences would be. And you tell me that, okay, if you do such and such, I will take your phone. So instead of us even talking about it, I will need you, just like a good child that you are, to bring me the phone, because you know what the consequences are.
Yes. And, you know, I'm so glad you said that, because one of the other foundational pieces that I recommend to families is communication.
Yeah.
So at every level of improving your child's behavior or making that coping toolbox for emotional regulation comes that communication piece, so that your children have a say in what's going on in their own world of their expectations and boundaries, and also what to expect when you're going to be consistent with the positive and negative consequences. So that is very important.
And that takes us to our next break. We will be right back.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Before we went on break, I know we had touched a little bit about your book. Is your book available via your website or on Amazon? Where can they get it?
The best place to go right now is my website. Again, that's behaviorcorner.com. It will be up on Amazon, so that'll be very exciting. Okay. And again, it's called The Building Blocks of Positive Parenting. And if I can, I would love just to say just a little something how I've designed this book for the busy parents. The first few chapters, I would hope that everyone would read, because it's about reality and how reality just dictates that things aren't always going to go smoothly, but then also goes into depth with the foundational pieces that we started talking about with parenting. But then the remaining chapters, parents get to pick and choose what behavior they're trying to improve within their home and with their kids. So there's chapters on formal diagnoses like ADHD. But then there's also chapters on things like we mentioned, my child won't listen. So there's a lot of flexibility. I branded it as the first book that parents don't have to read cover to cover, because you read the first few chapters, then you can pick and choose based on your area of need.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So if you want a copy of that book, you can go to behaviorcorner.com. I know there was something that I was thinking, as we were talking in the last segment, that I wanted to ask you to probably help the parents to touch that, a little bit when we're talking about regulating emotions. I also want to remind the listeners that I'm going to be bringing Bob back, because there's another topic that I read on a blog that I think every parent wants to understand, every teacher wants to understand on how to handle it, and that is bullying. So we would need a whole show on that. So what we're going to do is we will coordinate with Bob, and she'll come back as our guest again to talk to us about bullying, so that we have a whole topic on bullying, because then it's happening to your children as young as the 6 year, 7 year old to the young adolescents and adults. So it's something that a lot of parents are struggling with. So we're going to be talking about bullying in our next topic.
Yes, and there's so much that can be done for the bully themselves, the victim, and then there's also that third piece, the bystanders, which I'm looking forward to diving into those three main players when we're talking about the topic of bullying.
Excellent. So getting back to the fundamental skills to parenting, which you talk about, are there any behaviors or any probably requests, complaints that a lot of parents have that are similar in the ages that you have, the 6 to 7 year old? What is the common thing that you address a lot with that age?
I'd have to go back to that emotional regulation again. It's, managing when things aren't going their way, and then putting a plan in place for when things like that happen. We left off with the communication piece with the foundation, really having a discussion with your children. How are you feeling at that time? How do you know that you're starting to get upset and frustrated, and how can we stop that before it happens? Which then the coping toolbox comes into play. Also, the empathy piece. I really try to guide parents to show empathy to their children, because it can really help turn a situation around. And by empathy, I mean really trying to stand in the shoes of your child, you know, your 8-year-old child, your 6-year-old child. They're upset over something that maybe happened on the school bus. Or even if we go back to that example about being told no, to them, that is their whole world right now, and things are not going well for them and they're feeling upset. So sometimes just saying to them, I know you feel frustrated right now, or I know you feel disappointed right now because your friend wasn't nice to you on the bus. You know, you may get a head nod and they may give you a hug. You know, those younger kids are still willing to hug their parents. Yeah. And it just brings that level of stress down a little bit when we're able to show them empathy.
Oh, you spoke about the word, this S word, stress.
Stress.
So it's very important and key that parents understand that children also go through stress.
Yes, and to express our understanding of that can be very powerful in turning around a negative behavior.
Because then you, what you do is when you talk to them about stress and saying, I know that this is stressful, you know, the situation that happened to you, I know this is stressful when I ask you to do such and such when you just come from school, they learn to put, you know, I mean, to label it accordingly, to say, you know what, it's not because I'm being asked to do something that's stressing me out, that's making me angry, but I'm already tired. I am already, you know, going through this conflict that I had with my friend, or my friend couldn't talk to me and stuff. And then I come home and I'm mad and my mom and dad don't know that I'm mad.
That's
so then
right.
You get, yeah. So I think that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. And it, you made me think of something too.
Yeah.
I've talked to parents about what's the primary emotion here or behavior? What's the secondary one?
Yes.
You know, I mean, is it truly defiance and that's it, because they're, you know, in the stressful state and they're not listening? Or is it that disappointment because their friend couldn't talk to them? Is it that stress? Like, let's take a look at what may be below that defiance that you're getting right now, or that attitude that your kid comes home with, because there's usually more to it. And that's when empathy can play a really big role in trying to figure out what it is and help bring those emotions down.
Yeah, I usually even use the word, you know, take the temperature or check the temperature of, you know, your child or your parents when I'm talking to the, you know, children, to the adolescents, and saying, you know what, you come home, you know, and say, hi, mom, hi, dad. Listen to how they're answering you. They haven't
yes.
been with you and you haven't been with them, and they say, hey, and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say anything else. Because
you're
it's,
right.
It's not about you.
That's right. That's your signal right there.
Yes.
To give them some space. And if you go after them, you're only going to cause, you know, a blowout, or, you know, that stress is going to come out and you're going to have the defiance. So again, look in the mirror. You know, how are you reacting when you get
exactly.
that short answer? So
yep.
that's a really good point.
And same with the children, the same thing. Hi, honey, how are you? Why? And they run to their room. Something mm-hmm. is up. And when
you're
they
right.
are not upset and they are not going through that, you know, that very moment of having an attitude, when you can sit down and communicate with your child to say, if you come in the house and I say hi and something has happened and I see you running to your room, can I come and talk to you at that moment so you can tell mommy what's going on, or tell daddy what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Because it becomes a routine that they know that she's coming, she's going to ask me. Because most of the time, the parents will run after the kid and say, what's going on? What's wrong? I don't want to talk about it. Or they're just mm-hmm. quiet. And now mom and dad, they get upset because now you're having an attitude. What?
Yes.
Why are you getting upset for? It's like, but if you communicate it and they say, no, mom, I'll talk to you afterwards. Before we eat dinner, we'll have a moment where we can sit down before dinner and we talk about it. Hey, they've agreed. So then we have an agreement. You promise
yes.
that we'll talk before
and
dinner.
That's the plan, right? And communication is one of our
yes.
foundational pieces of being a successful parent. So that's going to make a huge difference in your household and with your children's behavior, if you can just communicate with them.
It does. It does.
It does. Yeah. And, you know, for some of the younger kids, I've found that they don't always have the words, the right words to express how they're feeling.
Yes.
And as they creep up into like that 10, 11, 12, 13, they may not want to use their words to talk.
Yes.
So I've also found it helpful for parents to have a communication box, just a typical shoebox. You know, put your feelings in there, put your thoughts, and then we're going to pull out what you wrote later at bedtime. And I'll do the talking if you want. But you still have that communication there, whether it's nonverbal in form of writing or if they're willing to talk to you with their words, which is great. But there's always options to have that important foundational piece of communication. Writing, use puppets, use toys. You know, if they won't talk to you, there are other ways. So there's hope for that too. I wanted to put that out there.
So in the shoebox, what do they have? Feelings, the different feelings?
Yes, different families I've worked with. We've called it different things. We've called it my thoughts box, my worry box, my feelings box. So when a child is having a thought, and maybe they don't want to verbalize it, maybe they don't know how, they can do a drawing. Or maybe they're afraid to use their words, but they're willing to write the words. I've seen that many, many times with children. They'll write it down and they'll keep it safe in their box. It's just less it's just less stress for them. I'm sure you found that it's harder for some children, even some adults, to actually admit when something is bothering them, or maybe they made a mistake. They don't want to say it, but it's so much easier to write it. So if they can write it down, they can still communicate with you as mom or dad.
Yeah.
And I tell parents, have a set time every night. Usually bedtime is the most convenient time because it's a routine that always happens.
Yes.
Take those 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you think your child needs, open the box and see what's in there. They know they can put their thoughts and feelings down. They're going to stay safe until it's time to talk to mom or dad. And like I said, if the child themselves are having a hard time verbalizing, they're still communicating with you through drawings. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Or writing on that paper. And you could always pick up that conversation verbally the next day or the next 2 days when they're feeling more comfortable about it. Because I know sometimes kids have a lot of heavy stuff that they're coming home with from school, from the community. So it's important to give them options for communicating with us.
That is, you know what, that is really good. And let me just put a disclaimer for parents, if I may call it a disclaimer. What Bob has shared with us today is something that will be well worth your while if you start implementing some of the ideas that she gave you today with the younger children from, you know, the age 6, 7 that she works with. Because when it comes to adolescents and their teenagers, at that time, I can guarantee you that if you want them to have this shoebox with the feelings, or you want to sit down at their bed and try to talk to them at night, most of them will not want to sit down with you and talk to you about what's going on, because it's not something consistently that they have been doing anyway. And sometimes, even if they were doing it at a younger age, something happens when they become teenagers and become independent and they become pre-adults that they don't want to talk about what's going on with them. If it's not something that's harmful, that they're hurting themselves or hurting someone else, I suggest that you don't force it if it's an adolescent, to try and squeeze them to say something about what's going on with them, because you're not going to get anything out of them if they're not willing to say to you anything for that moment. So I just needed to just put that out there, because I know a lot of parents struggle with that, to say my teenagers don't want to talk to me. But they will be different than the younger ones who are still willing to learn and to open up.
Yes, yes. You start that now, that becomes part of their routine. And that's not to say that even, you know, the children who have these boxes now will always talk as teenagers, but it will lay the foundation for it being a little bit more comfortable.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That Facebook group again, what is the name of that Facebook?
That is Raising Kids: Behavior Solutions That Work.
What I will do for all of you is I will also put it on our website, AmericaOutLoud.com. If you have any questions that you want me to ask Bob, you can email her, and her email is Bob, I think B-A-R-B, at BehaviorCorner.com. I will have her website and all her social media links, as well as that Facebook name on our website when you click on the website to listen to the radio. Any last words of wisdom about emotional regulation as we finish the show?
Just breathe. I love that one. Just breathe and teach your kids to just breathe. It makes such the difference. It does.
Yes.
Just breathe. Start with that. Start with just one thing. Just breathe.
And you know what? All the ideas that you gave them today will help calm themselves down. And when you're calm, you get a moment to breathe. Because as you breathe, you tend to think better, you tend to be more relaxed, and you tend to be more tolerant of your children's behavior.
Yes, your brain functions much more better when we are breathing. Take those deep belly breaths, as I say. Just breathe.
All right, Bob. I'm holding you up to that. You are a mommy too, so I hope that you will remember to breathe.
I will do my very best. Thank you for that.
Awesome. So let's do this again. The next show that I will do with Bob, you will be listening and hearing all about bullying and what it is that parents need to know, and also what you can do to help your children with bullying. So until next time, thank you for listening to the Dr. STEM Show. Be encouraged and encouraging.